Hello, everyone. How are you? Good? It appears that we have missed the party, so I don't know. I should have brought some glitter as well. I'm Joanna Mikulski. I'm the CEO of Assembly 4, and this evening I wanted to talk to you about love and good influence in a post-factual world. So I've been to the few sessions of this conference the last few days, and I'm going to be dealing with some themes that I think most of you have probably already heard about. You know, fake news, how do you talk to people who are haters? And what I really want to do with this session, because it's the end of the day on the second day of the conference, is to get everybody talking and to start using and perhaps working with some of the information that you've learned. My first question for you guys, though, is, there are optimists and there are pessimists. How many of you would say that you're generally optimistic about the state of the world? About the state of the world? About your own life? Okay, so a little bit more optimistic about your own life and own future than about the state of the world. So I'd like to start out with a, what should, I hope, be a fairly easy pop quiz. Quick true or false. So my first, true or false. Every day, the number of people living in extreme poverty, which is defined as less than 190 US dollars per day, stays about the same. How many people think that's true? How many people think that's false? The people who are false, you're right. Actually, every day, the world generally gets a little bit better when you are thinking about extreme poverty. So there's a lot of different ways that you might define that statistic, but one thing that we can say is, generally speaking, for a lot of people in the world, we've actually made a whole lot of progress. So then, as you can see, here's a statistic, which you guys can go on to prove it from our world and data, that you should be a little bit positive. What about this one, true or false? The lives of over 100 million children under age 5 have been saved since 1990, thanks to things like vaccines, diarrhea prevention, breastfeeding. How many people think that's true? Very good. And you would probably guess that I would say that, since I'm, as you can see, probably priming you to be a bit optimistic. That's also true. Things like child mortality have declined, across the globe. And, you know, frankly, I could keep doing this actually for quite a while on a lot of statistics. I could, you know, talk to you about women. I could talk to you about, you know, the health in general of people across the world. I can, you know, just really talk to you on a whole lot of social measures. The world has, in many ways, gotten to be a better place for a lot of people. And that's, you know, not to, you know, dismiss the fact that a lot of people are suffering, that there are a lot of crises in the world, but the reality is that in a lot of ways, despite, you know, things that we've seen, for me as an American, the, you know, recent U.S. election, which might feel like a little bit of a step back, there are reasons to be hopeful. So I think, you know, with Assembly 4, what, you know, I'm really dealing with is social change communication. So how can we help people who are working towards good use the best of behavioral science, use the best of what's out there to make a difference in the world? Yes, do you have a question? Well, so that's an interesting question, right? We all have different...
Depends on who you're talking to.
Yes?
But let's say an outright crazy person...
Yeah, so that's a good point, right? Everyone's definition of good might differ. But for me, I'm talking about people who are advocates for inclusion, who are advocates for justice, who are advocates for a world where, you know, things are not what the Trump voters might have wanted. But that's true, right? So I'm working for people who are trying to make the world a more equal place, and by doing that, what I'm trying to do is give people who want to achieve those things the same tools that, say, Coca-Cola would have, people who, for better or worse, used you know, use hate and fear in the U.S. election to move things in a different direction. So what I want to do is sort of go through some of the, what I said, sort of principles from science that can help people in their day-to-day life be hopefully better communicators. And I want to start by telling you a really embarrassing story about myself. So I want to take you back to the what seemed like the halcyon, you know, very innocent days of 2004. As you may remember, again in the U.S., I'm sorry, an American, there was what was a very contentious election. And I was working for the John Kerry campaign. And I was standing in Pennsylvania, so outside of Philadelphia, at a farmer's market. And I was, you know, really proud of myself because this woman came up to our table and started just yelling at us, you know, just telling us, you know, you guys are wrong. We had to go into Iraq, you know, WMDs, the terrorists are coming. And I looked at her and I just started spouting out statistic after statistic. Okay. So I started telling her about, you know, actually, you're wrong. There were no WMDs. You know, actually, most Muslims are good people. These terrorists, you know, they really aren't even Muslims. And I was so, so proud of myself. And, you know, at some point, this woman who was sitting there, you know, all angry in front of me, she, you know, bundled up in a rage and she stormed off, okay? And everyone who was standing at my table turned around and started high-fiving me. And for a really, really long time, I was super proud of myself for that story. So I really thought, wow, I had done something. And perhaps in a harbinger of what's to come, we all know, of course, how that 2004 election turned out, not, you know, in my favor. So how many people here think that I did a good job in that instance of actually changing anybody's mind? None of you. Very good. So can anyone tell me why it is that I did such a poor job in dealing with that woman? Yes? Why specifically? Exactly. Okay, so that is, yes, definitely part of the answer. One, we all have different statistics that we may believe, and approaching people with questions, we'll get to that. Much better strategy. Yes?
You could have also given what Jimmy Kimmel just recently did about the healthcare reform.
Yeah. Yeah, that is another thing we're going to get to, storytelling and emotions, but I would like to talk specifically, which a little bit of data and statistics gets to, something from behavioral science we know called the backfire effect. So not only, as you may have seen, was I really ineffective in changing this woman's mind, but most likely she left believing things that were false more strongly than she did before. So if I come up to you and I just give you a fact that contradicts a fact that you believe that's sort of central to your core being, most people don't react by then, you know, changing their mind. They actually react by believing their false belief more strongly. And this is something that we see throughout, you know, sociological studies. There was actually one specifically on sort of the Iraq War and sort of WMD in the United States, which showed that anytime you presented a Bush voter with evidence that, you know, there were no WMDs in Iraq, they actually turned around and believed that that was the case more strongly than they had before. And so this is one reason why I was really, really ineffective in changing this woman's mind. And, you know, another reason, not necessarily directly toward changing this woman's mind, but why it's so hard to communicate effectively when it comes to social change, when it comes to inclusion, is because we have this ingrained negativity bias. So we're just evolutionarily biased to pay more attention to things that are negative than are positive. And, you know, maybe when we were, you know, hunter-gatherers in the savanna, that was really useful, but today it's really not. And so if we are people who are interested in, you know, making sure that newcomers, refugees feel more welcome in Germany, we're people who want to sort of, you know, bridge barriers between people who don't agree. One thing we need to be really conscious of is the fact that, you know, whenever we're putting out a positive message, the negative message is going to resonate just that much more, and so we really need to repeat it. And when it comes to fake news, which was sort of a topic that is really pernicious for these two reasons, there is analysis of sort of fake news in the U.S., and while sentiment analysis when it comes to news is a bit difficult, you know, generally speaking, we are more likely to share something that has a really big emotion, positive or negative. But the fake news on balance that sort of was, you know, proliferating throughout the U.S. was more negative. So it was sort of a double whammy when it comes to behavioral science, right? So it was giving some people facts or what seemed like facts to them that confirmed their worldview. And it was also appealing to this sort of negativity bias, right? So it was, for the most part, on balance, you know, telling people, you know, what they wanted to hear so that, you know, you couldn't really counteract it. And then secondly, you know, it was making it just that much more difficult because most of it was negative. Not all of it. It's a little bit more complicated when sort of you get into the weeds, but generally speaking, that's what you see. So then, what do we do about this, right? How can we deal with this? I don't know about you guys, but when I sort of looked at the U.S. election, when I've been listening to people at this conference, you know, sometimes you can feel really overwhelmed, right? Like, social media just feels like the war of the bots, right? Like, there's, you know, bots on one side and bots on the other side. And, you know, frankly, if you're in the position that I'm in, you feel like your side just really isn't winning, right? But the fact of the matter is that we have a lot of evidence of ways that you can start to change people's mind and start to build movements. So I worked in particular around preventing violence. And violence is really a difficult issue to deal with because if you look at sort of across the globe, if you look at particular violence against children, which I was dealing with, it has over time gone down. But if you talk to a lot of people, they will tell you actually the world is becoming a much scarier place, that it has gotten worse. There's a whole book by Steven Pinker that you guys can read about how, you know, how violence has really improved. And what we've seen sort of when it comes to social change communications is that the people really just focus on presenting the facts, and often presenting facts around the problem. And what you really need to do, and what we found in our work, is shift the conversation entirely from spending a little bit of time talking about the problem and presenting the facts, and spending most of the time doing something completely different, which is presenting the path forward. And we did this through a project called Without Violence, where, you know, we presented to people that there are sort of solutions out there that work when it comes to violence prevention, sort of, but not directly sort of contradicting what they were saying, and instead, you know, shifting the conversation to one that was more based on, you know, emotion, on solutions, and on telling stories. So up here is sort of an example of sort of the bad communication that's out there. I don't mean to put UNICEF to blame them necessarily for this, where they really just go out and they affirm people's sort of negativity bias around the particular problem, when what they really should be doing, and what we saw sort of the initiative that we worked on with organizations across the globe, is shifting more to telling people, yeah, there's a problem out there, but sort of what can you do about it? And this is an example of some of the communications that we did for that. And moving, I think, just very quickly, because we don't have that much time. I want to give you a chance to talk. I can talk to you a little bit more about this particular project. We saw that once people who are working on violence prevention really shifted how they did advocacy, how they talked to policymakers, from sort of focusing on the negative, on sort of confirming people's negativity bias, towards moving to focus on sort of positive emotions and progress, that they actually started to make progress. Violence against children, which was not included in the Millennium Development Goals, which were sort of the first set of global goals, was included in the new Sustainable Development Goals, and it's sort of a goal for 2030. And the field actually started coming together, too, and did something they had never done before, which is start a new partnership around sort of ending violence against children. And so I think, you know, I'm happy to give you guys a little bit more sort of information on this particular project and sort of without violence, but I think you can look sort of across the field that when you sort of start thinking about solutions, start triggering the right emotions, that you can really see change happen, often on problems that might seem difficult to begin with, or difficult to deal with. So what do we do with this, right, in our daily life? So there's big initiatives out there. Sometimes it feels like what we see online is sort of overwhelming. In your day-to-day life, when you're sort of confronted with somebody who, you know, you may not disagree with, who may be with the wrong facts, I think the question is then, sort of, what do you do, right? And so I thought what I would do is sort of present five ideas. So the first one is, of course, listen. But not just listen. What you want to do is not approach the conversation as if it's a competition, right? That's what I did with that woman way back in 2004. I tried to come at her with, you know, my facts are the absolute best, your facts are the worst. And that's not the way to do it. Instead, what you need to do is approach the conversation as if it's a collaboration, right? You're both trying to reach sort of some, hopefully, and this comes to the next one, common place. So instead of looking at this woman and, you know, saying, I have the right facts, what I probably should have done is start thinking through what are the common values. So where are the places where we agree? Well, we probably all agree, right, that the world should be safe and that for, you know, the small number of Muslims in the world or small number of other radicals in the world who want to do harm to others, that we want to stop them, right? And sort of triggering this idea of sort of safety, you know, and security as being something that we all agree on. What you also want to do, sort of looking at behavioral science, is think through what are the right emotions. So that's another thing, right, that we've seen sort of on Facebook. There's been a lot of discussion of these outrage communities. So, you know, a lot of people making money off of anger and anger in certain groups. And, you know, if you're trying to, you know, make money off of advertising, that's a really great way to do it. But if you actually want to change people's minds, you should be looking for other emotions. And one particular emotion, and this sort of gets at these ideas of stories, is thinking about awe. So if we look at behavioral science research, when we look at something that's really awesome, something that just seems sort of otherworldly, whether it's sort of in interpersonal nature, whatever it might be, that sort of triggers this emotion, afterwards, we are, it turns out, much more likely to want to be collaborative and sort of find common ground. And so, you know, as you're talking about this, how might I have triggered awe in that particular woman who came up to me? It's not easy, right? But frankly, if I'm an American, I might have talked about the sacrifices that people make, right? I might have talked about the fact that, okay, I didn't agree with that war, but I will agree that I have friends and neighbors and sort of talk about their willingness to, you know, give themselves to a higher cause. And in sort of talking about those stories and in sort of those daily stories, hopefully, you know, given her some idea or triggered some idea of something, right, greater than ourselves. And then, you know, fourth, look at sort of social proof. So think about who are the people that she respects. You know, unfortunately, I mean, I like to think that I'm really different. I want to be different from everybody else. The reality is that most people want to be like other people, and they want other people around them to like them. And so how could I sort of make her think about how people that she might want to be like might think differently? And not only people that she might want to be like, but people who are of authority, who she might respect. And so that's, you know, something else that I might have done in my daily life. And then the final one, and this is like one of my favorite ideas ever from social change communications and from sort of thinking through how you can get people to do things for good. And it comes to a story, but it's talking about a specific story. Does anyone here know who Marshall Gantz is? Marshall Gantz? Okay, you should look him up. Legendary community organizer in the United States. You know, really an inspiration for the Obama campaign. But whenever you're trying to get people on your side, whenever you're trying to build a movement, it's not just about one story, it's actually about three stories. So there's the story of me. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Why am I standing up here in front of you today? And then there's the story of us. So there's the story of all of us. Why are we here today? What are we going to do? And then there's a third story. There's the story of now. Why is this the moment that we can make change? And so as you're thinking through stories, it's important to think through sort of what's the emotional connection, you know, how can I, you know, talk to this person without just attacking them with facts? But it's actually not just about one story, it's about three. Yes, and I am now going to go to questions. I would like all of you guys to talk to one another. That was me sort of running through a very quick version of this workshop for you guys. So I will take questions, and then what I would, you know, really like everyone to discuss, because, you know, honestly, I was at Republica last year, and I was really bummed I didn't have more time to talk to one another. So I'd like to give you guys that chance, too. Yeah. 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 So that's a really good question. There actually is no difference. It's a question of whether you use your power for good or your power for evil. And for me, frankly, what I've seen is that people who are working towards inclusion, who are working towards justice, who are sort of, you know, on the side that I've been working for, they are often really reluctant to use these tactics for exactly a reason that you mentioned, which is they feel like they're manipulating people. But quite frankly, I'm manipulating you. You're being manipulated all the time. And so what I, you know, really advocate is, you know, you have weapons at your disposal. Don't leave them on the table when it comes to doing good. But, of course, that doesn't mean you do everything, right? You don't actively try to mislead people. You don't do things that you think are unethical. But you really should use people who are trying to achieve social good should use the same tactics as those that are effective on the other side, unfortunately. Otherwise, you'll lose. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
You said you're talking about the positive action. Well,
yeah.
What I'm trying to like, are we not in the fact of what is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I use post-factual a bit ironically, right? Because it seems like facts are so amorphous. But I also use it very purposefully, which is that when it comes to convincing people, So we need facts, right? Like if we, you know, want to do things that are actually going to help children, actually make the environment better, that we need science, you know, to tell us sort of what to do and to sort of come up with those solutions. But the reality is that when it comes to facts, they're not that useful in actually getting people to sort of rally behind something. And so when I say sort of post-factual world, I'll admit I'm using it a little bit ironically, but it's getting you to think through, if facts aren't what's going to change people's minds, what's next, right? I'm going to take two more questions, and I actually really want you guys to turn to one another and sort of, you know, just take a moment to sort of talk through what you've seen and also perhaps think through, you know, how you might use these principles in your daily life. But I think there was one there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of this, right, is sort of you have to kind of keep a number of purposes sort of in yourself and sort of in your interactions at all times. So I think, you know, it's one thing, it's important to go into conversations with people with an open mind, thinking that you might change your mind, but not going against your principles, right? So it's a matter of, you know, what's the collaboration for and sort of what's the goal? And sort of once you find, hopefully, that common place, where is the part that you can start coming together when it comes to sort of concrete solutions or, you know, things to do? And it's also a little bit about, you know, not just the goal, but sort of a lot of how we approach the world comes from inside of us, right? And so it's sort of how we see ourselves sort of in that conversation and how we identify, you know, ourselves that's going to drive ultimately the outcome. Okay, so really seriously, I really wanted to make a workshop out of this. I don't really have quite the time, but I would really love it if each of you could sort of turn to the person next to you and do one of two things. One, share something that was, you know, really interesting that might be relevant for this particular topic from ReProbLica, or maybe even better yet, share an embarrassing story like the one that I shared and sort of reflect on how you might have done a better job in changing somebody's mind. And I don't really think we'll have a chance to sort of debrief, but what I would really love is if, you know, you guys come up with something great, you come up and share it with me, and I am happy to talk to you a little bit more about the work that I'm doing as well. So thank you.